Hello, welcome to a podcast on fire 121, The Mad Cold-Blooded Murder. And my name is Kenny B, and I'm the only one here tonight. And don't worry, I've not fired anyone, nor has anyone left the network, despite me being Hitler around these parts. But the remaining crew are all busy in their actual lives this week, and I usually am not. And did see this as a challenge, going solo that is, to see if I can approximate even 1% of the great work Jacob does going solo over at Podcast Without Honor and Humanity. So I've always admired that he can maintain the level he does, and to always admire that he can produce shows often going solo, and such great shows. So I salute you, sir, and I humbly try out the solo stance you've perfected over the lifespan of your ongoing podcast. Actually, it's not the first time I am going solo on the network, as way back when we had our first year anniversary, at around the 32nd episode mark, I think, we did, me and Mike Banner, solo shows to honor Stu's episode 1, where he went in solo and broke the Podcast on Fire cherry, if you will. And listening back to it today, it's the sentiments are still true about my notes on writing and trying to encourage creativity, but I'm not very comfortable speaking solo, clearly, and I sound totally drugged out and asleep to my ears anyway. You know, energy. So I'll try to better that recording from episode 32-1, I think we called it. You'll get a link to the archive that's on the site containing our episode 1 through 32, 33 that hasn't got a show post as such. But anyway, you are listening to Podcast on Fire on the Podcast on Fire Network, the website podcastonfire.com, where you'll find all the shows, and soon there'll be more shows than the, I think, six ones that are up currently. You can contact us via email, podcastonfire@googlemail.com. We have a message forum, podcastonfire.com/forum, where we have tons of members only, a huge members only archive it is. We put cut conversations in there, exclusive movie reviews and outtakes and all good fun stuff. We don't do that anymore. We put up bonus episodes on the website when we are aiming for exclusive content. So you can get them via the website. And on the forum, by the way, if you didn't know, we are not taking registrations as of right now due to problems with spam. And the discussion has neatly moved over to social media, i.e. Facebook, where we also have a few endeavors. So you have our fan page, go to facebook.com/POF network, but also you can join the discussion group and follow the community there and interact with the community, follow the show updates and what have you. And that is reachable if you search Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search box, and I'll add you gladly. The Podcast on Fire Network is also on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. I do writing, as you all know, I hope you all know anyway, on sogoodreviews.com, mixing category 3, mixing Taiwan cinema of the late 70s, early 80s, and in general cool-ass Taiwan cinema, but also cool as Hong Kong cinema of a certain era, 70s and 80s as well. And adding to that, my fascination with ninjas has a place there. You know, it's a wide focus, but still I've excluded so much stuff that I did years before. Now I focus on sort of mainly this. And as you're listening to this, the main review that is up is Dragon Against Vampire, IFD's complete version of a Korea horror martial arts movie, really, with an emphasis on horror, starring Elton Chong. But tomorrow I'll put up the review for Ninja Avengers. It's actually known as Ninja Operation something, I think, as well. That stars Richard Harrison and Stuart Smith, and it's a cut-and-paste effort mixing in, well, it's there, inept footage, great footage, though. Inept is at some times, at least in the case of this movie, incredibly great. Mixing that in with the Taiwanese Chang-Yi movie, I think it's called Fury in Storm, if I remember correctly, has, amongst other things, a very noticeable sight of a Westerner in a co-leading role dragging all throughout the movie with him a huge cross. And the payoff for that, I think, is taken from another movie. I can't think of the movie right now. Might have been a Django movie, so taken from an Italian Western. And certainly, Fury in Storm comes off as a as an Eastern Western, an early one there. So that's all good fun. That is up on the website tomorrow. Curiously enough, on Ninja Avengers, the print I saw once upon a time was cut. The British Board of Film Classification cut the movie, but they didn't censor it. They removed almost all of the ninjas, essentially 99% of ninjas. Someone thought that this clearly didn't belong and tried to remove the story element. And therefore, it's a short movie, and it's almost all Fury in Storm, or what was left of Fury in Storm after IFD re-edited it. And it's fascinating looking at that cut print, because there's barely any Stuart Smith, and definitely no Richard Harrison. I think he's in one scene. But I got a chance to see it uncut finally, and that's what the review is based on. And that will also be video reviewed on sleazykvideo.com. And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreview, so follow me on there. You can access the Podcast on Fire Network on iTunes, so subscribe to us there and rate us and leave a comment if you like. And also stream us on Stitcher. Download that application from stitcher.com, and you can download it to your smartphone as well and stream us. Search Podcast on Fire Network once you're in, and the respective shows can be added individually. So, thank you for following us in whatever way you do. So, moving on to the network updates. We took a week off last week in terms of posting a podcast on Fire to rest, research, and record other shows. So, what got logged behind the scenes was recording and completion of This Week in Sleaze on the first Rape by an Angel, the first of our complete coverage of the series, of the Wong Jing produced series, that isn't category free after from the sequel and onwards, strangely enough, but we'll still review it on This Week in Sleaze. And we will mix this coverage with regular Tidy Whitey Theater episodes, formerly known as the This Week in Sleaze Double Bill. And the Shore Boobs coverage is coming back. I'm just working with the man who helped us during the Night of Night special, Ma Xing Yi, he's called online. I'm working with him to pick a movie and getting his assistance to get some background in there for perspective and all of that. So it's invaluable help, really. Because I'm new to the Shaw Brothers. Well, I'm familiar with Shaw Brothers, but not necessarily with the Shaw Brothers history, and definitely not with their exploitation history, their making adults only movies history. So Night of Nights was a terrific episode to start with in that regard, and I'm hoping that coverage will be good fun. Check show post for links to that prior This Week in Sleaze special on Night of Nights with me and King Hu. We went on for 3 hours mostly on this one, but also ended the show with about an hour on the last sleazy movies watched. And King, who is so great when he's in his element, talking about these messed up movies. I think on that show he reviewed Lan Kwai Fong Swingers, which is, if you're familiar with the episode, a really shameless exploitation movie. Check out, only if you're going to listen to anything from that show, do go to that section of last sleazy movies watched. There's running times listed in the show post that I'll link to. So check that out. Your jaw will actually drop when listening to King Hu talk about that particular movie, and I would never be able to do it justice the way King Hu does. So, on This Week in Sleaze, by the way, a few days ago you got the actual debut of Tidy Whitey Theater, where me and the great Lord Joshua Regal covered the first ever local movie to be rated category free, which is Sentenced to Hang. But we also covered the movie it was based on, the Shaw Brothers drama Kidnapped. Sentenced to Hang is not based on it, it's a literal remake, a very faithful remake of Kidnapped. So hope you enjoy that. And the next Tidy Whitey Theater will probably be the Stuart Ong mix of Rock on Fire, aka Girl on Fire, and Rebecca, probably not very associated with the Hitchcock classic, but you never know. Without King Who, it's curious this, me and the great lord Joshua Regal have made This Week in Sleaze into a Stuart Ong show rather than a Charlie Cho show. Stuart Ong seems to pop up in almost every movie we cover, which is not a bad thing. When King Who was on the show, it's the Charlie focus, and when the great lord is on the show, it's the Stuart focus. So that's a curious development. Also, more immediate in terms of what is in the pipeline to do, I still plan to do the Taiwan cinema show called Taiwan Noir soon, but I have to re-watch the documentary Taiwan Black Movies, because seeing it the first time, there were some points I wanted to do some research on, some political events mentioned very briefly. I want to do research to see if there's anything to find, to see if it actually fits in my particular review. I want to treat this very seriously, and as far as I can. I mean, the documentary is very basic. That's not a bad thing. I think it's a great introduction. So, and I can't really provide much than the documentary. I mean, the documentary told me tons of new stuff, and it was very, very cool. But it's due for a rewatch, perhaps this weekend. As you're listening to this, I might be watching Taiwan Black Movies, and will record the first episode very, very soon. That will also be a solo episode, and I've already written a personal intro for that debut show, and for the subsequent shows, I have talked to someone we've talked about on the podcast before, to be a semi-frequent or even frequent guest or even co-host. And I'm so looking forward to doing Taiwan Noir, and seeing your feedback on Facebook, for instance, when posting about the various Taiwan movies that I, among others, love. I mean, that there's more fans of this. There seems to be a slight buzz out there, and a sort of rep about Taiwan movies, increasing. And I'm hoping to get you on board, listeners, and get the awareness going off these movies, as they are actually more obtainable online, but not in a legal manner or official manner. So I hope to see you there, and I can tease already, by the way, after the debut show, covering the documentary, where we are introduced. We have a documentary, but also you listeners are introduced. In the second episode, we will cover a key movie in that era, that late 70s, early 80s era of social realism movies and female revenge movies and crime movies. We will cover the movie On the Society File of Shanghai, starring Lux Yufan, who made a splash with that movie. And that will be a suitable starting point, I think. And hoping, therefore, I will have the guest I talked about, or the co-host, or the co-host on that episode. And that'll be good fun. Possibly very challenging, though. I know, despite the poster on the Society File of Shanghai showing Lux Yufan, in not minimal clothing but very wet clothing, it seems to contrast against what it actually is, which seems like a political movie. So that's already fascinating that they wanted to promote it that way and get people into the theater looking at it, and therefore possibly there was a good movie waiting there, a good political movie, and a good movie in terms of exploitation and violence as well, in a way. So it'll be fun, I hope. Anyway, other research involves plans in the long run, but within a month or two, my aim is to have two additional shows having made their debut on the network, including Taiwan Noir, but also another show that I won't be on. It's not officially announced yet. I want the people involved in that to be finished first before we announce anything. So stay tuned. So a few brief mentions of last movies watched before the actual main review. I re-reviewed just yesterday, I think, or the day before yesterday, David Lai's 1983 erotic drama The Body Is Willing. And the reason I did that is I found out the DVD is a whopping 6 minutes longer than the VCD from Joy Sales. It's part of the Legendary Collection. It's 6 minutes longer than the VCD that is based on the old cinema print. But Fortune Star had a longer version, an uncut version even, with more sex, nudity, and drugs, essentially. And when we get those additional 6 minutes in, the movie gets to reveal its intentions a bit more. Its point is made more clearer by being this explicit. So that review will go up on SoGoodReviews.com in the next month or two. So hope you can catch that. On the theme of Taiwan, by the way, and a movie I need to return to when Taiwan Noir is in full swing. It's a movie called The Dignified Killers, a late 80s flick, 89 or early 90s flick, 91. But regardless, boy, oh boy. It's not so much Taiwanese gang war, but rather gang gore. And it surprised me. I didn't know anything about it. And it moves at a blistering pace. And while it's crude in that blood department, in that gore department, we get stretches that are not far off from earning the comparison if Story of Ricky was made as a gangster film. And it kind of keeps up, though. We eventually go down routes of betrayal and exploitation and female revenge, complete with the female revenge consists of high-kicking girls with guns in silver suits. There's no reason for me to explain it now. It's just good fun. It's a terrific platter of barely strung together filmmaking that wants to please our basic primal need for blood. At least I have that, and boy does it ever please. And it was so much good fun. Lam Wai, the great Lam Wai from Long Arm of the Law, and Emily Chu, star Emily Chu of A Better Tomorrow fame, one and two. So those were the movies that I, among other movies, have watched lately. And it's time already. I mean, it doesn't take long when it's only me here to jump right into the main attraction of the show. And it's the review of the Mad Cold-Blooded Murder, aka the Cold-Blooded Murder from 1981, starring Bruce Lee, Michael Chan, and Carter Wong. And Bruce Lee is back after a hiatus from Podcast on Fire. It's not like he's a theme of the Podcast on Fire network, but we did review his directorial effort and he starred in it as well, Challenge of the Tiger, on episode 113, featuring Richard Harrison playing tennis with his nude, or topless rather, women by his side. And there's also a fight with between Bruce Lee and a bull. So, Challenge of the Tiger is classic already, in based on those two inclusions. So, good mad fun. The plot of the Mad Cold-Blooded Murder, taken from my brief review of the film Once Upon a Time. After a killer is leaving a trail of prostitutes behind him, Cop Wong, played by Carter Wong, is under pressure to solve the case. Meanwhile, we see the poor family of K's. K is played by Michael Chan, disintegrate as his wife, played by Lily Chan, who appeared in The Body Is Willing too. As his wife gets a job and decides to go for the wealth the boss of the opera troupe can offer up, and that sends him on a nutsoid path. And that opera troupe bit I missed out on in the dubbed version that I watched watched before this show. It's possibly more pronounced in the subtitled version. I must have come up with it somewhere, but I was surprised when I read my synopsis. Opera troupe. But anyway, watching the intro of the Mad Cold-Blooded Murder, or as the dubbed version is called, it's merely called the Cold-Blooded Murder. It starts with Bruce Lee, essentially, and he receives top billing. And will you, therefore, you ask yourself, get the feeling that it's Bruce Lee's film or Michael Chan's film, considering again the former has top billing in the first scene in the film? Well, considering whose sections are stronger, I'd say the man with the tats, which is not Bruce. It's his film, and it's the more powerful sections of the film, as I'll explain. Thinking of that, all while thinking of that, the opening action and freeze frame credits have actions that has no sign of the husband, K's character of Michael Chan, going cuckoo, and there's no evidence of him starting killing prostitutes. There's no evidence of that flick. It really evokes cut and paste technique, a la IFD. And of course, of course, on cue, Kong Do, a frequent actor in IFD's own footage in various movies like Inferno, Thunderbolt, and what have you, he turns up and fights Bruce Lee. At least it's not Bruceploitation, though. I'm not saying that I dislike seeing all this, but it isn't Bruceploitation, this movie. Lee just has the glasses that you kind of associate with the image of Bruce Lee. Maybe Lee just liked them, and good on him, fine. It all is just a pre-real thing of Bruce Lee fighting, albeit there's gritty fighting here, and it all sets up his sub-story there with Kong Do, his enemy in the film. And we do cut to heavy breathing, panting almost, white gloves, seedy environments, and a messy murder. Finally, a movie two has entered, essentially. And we get a murder montage, essentially, where the body seems to be piling up, and we get shots of the sirens of the cop cars, and repeated shots, really. And it seems like they are doing their best to make us believe that progress is being made by the cops, but they aren't really. And Michael Chiani is really on a tear, and there's no problem really to spot that it's Michael Chan. Or they do have obviously shots that conceal the identity of the killer, but there's no problem identifying him, and the movie isn't really structuring itself rather that a reveal will happen at the end of the film. So the behind the hat and the glasses, there's still the iconic looking Michael Chan, and it really is iconic, I think. We see him cross out newspaper ads, presumably advertising prostitutes, specifically ones named Yin, and that's presumably the name of his wife. I know it sounds like I'm not paying attention, but I didn't necessarily catch the name Yin being, it wasn't mentioned 10 or 12 times every half hour or anything. And Michael Chan's character has apparently killed 12 prostitutes in 3 weeks. That's a lot. And one thing that is very cool, actually, I admit that it's cool to see during, the relatively few chances kung fu actors got to appear in modern environments. I mean, we're so used to seeing Carter Wong, for instance, or mainly Carter Wong in the case of this movie, being in a period martial arts movie from Joseph Kwo, what have you, and even Michael to some extent. But I am anyway, used to seeing him more in modern efforts like The Club and what have you. And it's also really, again, this is made in 198 this is made in 1981. It's really the right era to portray Hong Kong thrillers, cop thrillers, with a certain grit. They managed to achieve that grit rather during this era. It's shot very loose and in real settings and with gritty cinematography, and it works so well during this era. This grit comes through almost naturally because they are in the environments, really. It's not a studio production, this. And Michael Chang going cuckoo on screen is kind of memorable, and it's been at least twice. I can't remember any other role aside from Dressed Off for Life. I think it was made in 1983 or 4. It's on Ocean Shores VCD, well, out of print, but Ocean Shores did release that. And in that movie, he played a former boxer who's impotent and starts killing and raping all across Hong Kong. All good fun, so to say. Anyway, what Michael Chan what he's playing is a mainlander, an immigrant, obviously therefore struggling financially, and him and his wife are, they obviously want to find the meal ticket in Hong Kong, the key to, financial being financially set. And it seems like K is proactive. He's seen having at least a job during one day at a construction site, and he sells oranges in the street, illegally though, because as soon as the cops come running, they start running. And he seems active, and the wife is more frustrated without a pure reason for it. It seems that she's given up. She just wants the easy way out, and And it all does get, we do get an image, you know, a snapshot of the life, and it helps that it's all seemingly shot on location. I wouldn't be surprised if the house that they live in, Michael Chan and Lily Chan, if this is a real house that they crammed cameras into, and it's really well captured by director Albert Law, who's only done one other movie, at least according to Hong Kong Movie Database, and that was a movie called Hope from 1995. You know, a 14-year-old gap between that and The Cold-Blooded Murder, so not a filmmaker that was prolific, obviously. And Kay actually, before going nutsoid and being a murder, he displayed hard heart towards fellow immigrants, and even you know, when a cop has caught an old lady that has sold illegally on the street, fruit or what have you, he says, let her go and take me instead. And Michael is very good at conveying all of that. By the way, do you remember that this was a Bruce Lee flick as well? If you're watching the dubbed version, it seems far away, doesn't it? And far-fetched now that this slice of life kind of drama actually involves Bruce Lee at to some extent. But yeah, he is in it. And furthermore, okay, and on that tangent, that is really calm and has heart. You know, he even takes sexual rejection calmly. He tries to be a good husband and father. And while the wife does start working, you know, it all is going to lead towards a heartbreak. You know, it's calmly building, set to a moody synthesizer score that's probably stolen from somewhere. I don't know. I don't know my movie scores very well. And the wife ultimately comes off as very unsympathetic, as she unfairly wants the son back after she's found that financial, you know, meal ticket via the boss of the opera troupe, and she even sends in the boss's henchmen to beat up Michael Chan. And Albert Law keeps it really gritty and vicious with the violence as well. I mean, he probably wasn't the action director. There's no action director listed on Hong Kong Movie Database, but you do have, I think, an eye behind this, a vision. And it really works when portraying Michael Chan's character, and when there's no Bruce Lee or Carter Wong. Obviously, overall, though, this movie isn't a cut and paste movie where they inserted Bruce Lee after the fact. He was on the production, but it is borderlining on being cut and paste, considering the distance of the characters and the plots and the events and all of that. And then the movie kind of switches to more focus on the cops and the procedural and their personal lives, and it starts really to peter out the movie a little bit as it goes along. Carter's personal life, for instance, we see him interacting a little bit with his girlfriend or wife, and he, you know, the pressure of actually solving the case, it takes out the frustration on her a little bit, feeling that she questions his effectiveness, and obviously a character where emotions are boiling on the outside. Not deep drama, but still there. And it doesn't help that his friend and classmate is actually turns out to be a bit of a rival, because he is a cop that's been educated overseas, and Carter Wong feels a little bit pushed back in favor of this bit more, you know, shining star super cop, if you will. And that cop is, by the way, is played by actor Ga-Lun from Jumping Ash, Red Spell Spells Red, and again, the body is willing. He was in a supporting role in that. Further procedural in the movie, by the cops, they stage an undercover operation with one of the female cops acting as a girlfriend of one of the slightly more goofy cops, and when they're walking in public, you know, being affectionate with each other, he tries to take a little bit of advantage, you know, getting into that role, and that's a slight goofy side to the movie that, despite not being extensive, it definitely stalls overall the movie. And really, the cop angle does. I mean, it's really pedestrian and not an insight into the times and the grit, and the grit isn't there really anymore. And same with the gang angle, because in mid-film, Kong Do gets released from prison, and he meets Bolo, one of his henchmen is Bolo, or he has arrived from Thailand, so he becomes one of his henchmen, I guess, and he wants revenge on Bruce. And that's a minor, very inserted in a very flimsy way. Again, it evokes the feeling of being a cut and paste production. We don't get too much of that, thankfully. It's broken up finally by, again, that panting and that heavy breathing with the tight camera on Chan, the murderer. No, it's actually a regular customer that has taken aphrodisiac and needs to do it. They turn, turn the tables a little bit. This scene where we get this unexpected, goofy, and kind of crude comedy, so again involves the female cop and now being forced to go undercover as a prostitute. And this unexpected joke kind of worked for me. I didn't see it coming. I didn't remember it from my first viewing years ago. And by the way, I say that she's asked to act as a prostitute to try and lure the killer. All throughout the dub, they never use the term prostitute. They all say whore. And it seems like they don't aim for any, so to say, politically correct term throughout the movie. It seems so casual the way they use whore. There's a whore on the roof, I think, is one of the a dialogue later on in the film, not related to her character as such, but you know what I mean. You do notice it that it's the language is rather crude. I'm not sensitive as such, but it's noticeable. As you watch the movie and see the mixture of Michael Chan and Bruce Lee, essentially, you wonder if it's only one director on the production, because the visions seem so different. In skill, definitely. Maybe a key cast member took reins for the cops and robbers section, essentially. The cops section with them trying to track down the killer and the interaction that Bruce Lee has with Kong Do. Maybe even Bruce Lee directed that because he had started his directing career by this point. I think Challenge of the Tiger was the same year, even. So he had experience behind the camera. But it all is so much more alive when concerning itself with its main subject and the darkness, the serial killer angle. And Michael Chan, I mean, he's so comfortable and really iconic in his in his presence. He has presence, and especially when we see him in full view when in his disguise. We see him mid-flick, how he disguises himself with a hat, glasses, white gloves, and it really is kind of scary. It looks badass and scary. And here we get sections where his there's rather attempts at murder. He has to abort his several missions here, as he actually encounters the undercover female cop and resistance as well. And there's a parking lot chase and an elevator chase that is done fairly well. I mean, it's classic horror movie chase scenarios, and it's something that director Law does, okay with. And the most disturbing murder actually comes at the tail end of this sequence of the bloody fight back by the victim, and then she's strangled, and that slow, life draining from you is really the most disturbing murder in the film. And it's also kind of where the movie turns personal for one of the characters, because I won't reveal the specifics of that. Yeah, I mean, there is evidence of Albert Law merging the grit that I talked about when dealing with Michael Chan's character and the cop procedural, that merging these two, essentially merging Michael Chan and Carter Wong. And at that time, it was so compelling in Hong Kong cinema. I need to re-emphasize. And the movies clearly could find momentum, channeling this grit, and Albert Law definitely does, even though the true momentum of the film is earlier, as we get the backstory to K and the subsequent, career path as killer, if you will. There was evidence of something more powerful here in this movie that is disrupted by the pedestrian. Even though, as I said, towards the end, in particular, the cops chasing and honing in on Michael does merge well at times. And movie really should be over by the time the killer and cop story conclude, but it isn't. It has extra bits involving Bruce Lee and Kong Do finishing their story, and the movie didn't need this extra 5, 10 minutes, unless demanded or a compromise was made, featuring commercial aspects versus having a a vision there. And why not have both? Someone clearly, argued. And because you will get bias if you have a familiar face on the cover and the poster, and if you have a, I don't know, a kung fu angle to it via the poster, if you will. And I realized, going back and checking some select bits from the subtitled version that I also have, the movie really was changed to appear more for action junkies, but only on the export version that is dubbed in English that I watched for this time. That has more Bruce Lee scenes, mainly the beginning and end, and also the middle section, because Kong Do, as far as I know, wasn't in the subtitled version or not as much. And it is interesting to put yourself in the heads of those who wanted to sell the movie. It's cool that you have a chance to see two different versions of a movie, but overall, the dubbed version is more shaky because the action elements aren't introduced well, despite them being competent and gritty in their own right. It's not like we get kung fu as such. It's gritty bashing, but I recommend the subtitled version over this any time of the day, because it has more proper focus on Michael Chan and less Bruce. But it didn't really fit to mix them as they did in this export version. And if you can't find the subtitled version, it's probably cropped, but it originally had very small subtitles, so you can actually follow along. The subtitles aren't very cropped. So I do recommend The Cold-Blooded Murder, or The Cold Blood. Robert, I do recommend The Mad Cold-Blooded Murder over The Cold-Blooded Murder, which is the latter is the title on the English print that I watch. So that is it. Next time, I'll leave it open actually in terms of what we're gonna pick for review next time. You might even hear me alone again, but in all honesty, all of this has made me realize that perhaps I should record a backup episode or two to have in the pipeline in case we can't record during a particular week. Such show won't feature network updates as such, because we don't want to date the show. It's merely, essentially maybe a last movies watch and a main movie review. But again, don't worry, listeners. The guys are fine. David is fine. Tom is fine. Stu is obviously very much living the life now, being married and all that. They are living real lives. I, for the most part, do not. That's why I'm here most times, almost every week. Even I took a break last week. So thank you for listening to my solo show, the Podcast on Fire 121, a more leaner show, if you will, and that's not a bad thing, I guess. So contact information again really quick. You've been listening to Podcast on Fire 121, and the website is podcastonfire.com. Email podcastonfire@googlemail.com. Visit the message forum, podcastonfire.com/forum. Can't register at the moment though, but you that have access to members only. But we also have bonus episodes steadily growing on the main site, connected to special shows, if you will, and extending them that way. You can listen to the bonus episodes and enjoy the full Podcast on Fire Network experience that way. We are also on Facebook. You can check out our fan page, facebook.com/PUF Network. And we also have our discussion group. So come on in, and the way you reach that is just to type in Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search box, and that will pop up. And we're also on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. Again, I do my writing, Kennebier, that is, on sogoodreviews.com. sleazykvideo.com is where the video reviews are. Check out Dragon Against Vampire. Check out Ninja Avengers tomorrow. And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. Rate and subscribe to us via iTunes if you prefer listening to your podcasts that way. And stream us on the go with Stitcher. Download that to your computer, which is not really on the go as such, but you can download it to your smartphone as well. So when you're in, search Podcast on Fire Network, and you can add each individual show. And hope to see you there. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you everybody for listening all throughout our history. And for those of you who tune in every week, thank you for the attention, and we hope to bring you more extensive coverage of Asian cinema. As you heard during the network updates, there's more coming, and a great old focus on Taiwan cinema. I think will be fun. At least it will be fun for me, and I hope that will reach a few of you out there. So thank you very much, and I've been your host for this evening, the only one in the room, Kenny B, and thank you again for listening. Bye bye.